Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show. I'm not going to be down. I know the markets are down. I know that the economy looks like it's on the ropes. You have Europe. You have China. You have it's just crazy. But I'm not going to be that way tonight. We're going to be talking about positive things, and I'm going to force Eric Geisler, our glass half-empty guy, to talk positive tonight when he's on. But we've all seen the turmoil. You've opened your statements. You're not happy. But you know what, folks? We're going to talk you off the cliff here. But before we get to all of that, Eric will be joining us in just a few minutes. Just a little bit of news of the week. We did have Jenny Yellen talk this week and over the path of rising rates, and she pretty much said that, hey, with the risk of the global markets, don't expect possibly any additional rate increases anytime soon. And she even suggested that if we got into an economic downturn, which no one's really suggesting, that they could turn to negative interest rates like some of our friends around the globe. Many insurers are losing a lot of money in the affordable health care plan, including Humana and nonprofit Blues. They reported mounting losses as well. And then the strength of the dollar. You know, we've been – what's interesting is if you talk to a group of people that really aren't into this stuff, like I have the opportunity to on a regular basis, and I say, do you think the dollar is getting stronger or do you think it's getting weaker? And most people will say, oh, it's weak, it's, you know, because we have all the debt, but it's the strongest thing out there. I mean, the U.S. dollar has gained 26.6%. This comes from by the numbers against the euro over the last 2 years, 2014, 2015. And a stronger dollar – not only impacts the sale of U.S. products abroad, because it takes more of the weaker currency to buy our stuff, but it also translates into smaller profits for American multinational companies. And when their foreign sales are converted back to dollars, they just don't make as much. And 46.3% of revenues of those in the S&P 500 are basically driven from overseas in foreign sales. So that has a lot to do with some of the problems that we're having. And then finally, the president's 2016 budget target, a lot of retirement account issues. For the president's fiscal year 2016 budget was unveiled earlier this week to the American public. The president's budget is really more of a wish list than anything else, but it's a good indicator of where the administration is heading. And this year's version of the budget included a number of provisions targeting retirement accounts. It wasn't a big surprise because there's been many of these provisions on a regular basis over the last several years. But what was a surprise, how many proposals were targeted at retirement accounts and how many of those new proposals there were. All told, this year's budget featured over a dozen provisions that, if were to put into law, could directly impact your retirement savings. One big one for me, net unrealized appreciation, the elimination of the NUA tax break. This is the way this works. You've worked for Cummins, you've worked for General Electric, you've worked for any of these companies for a long time, and you've bought the company stock the entire time you've been there. When you get ready to retire, there's a cost basis on those stocks. And let's just say that it's $50,000 that you've bought all this stock over all these years, over 40 years. This is actually a real-life story from a real-life client. They were able to pull the stock out of the account, pay taxes on the 40 grand, and then have $700,000 of net unrealized appreciation. You put that into a non-qualified account. You receive capital gains treatments if you sell it. If you die, there's a stepped-up basis to your heirs. Pretty cool tax break, but that looks like it's possibly going to go away. It's been around for 50 years, so I'm kind of shocked to see that happen. Limiting the Roth conversions to only pre-tax dollars. This is going to eliminate the old backdoor Roth IRA idea. You know, you put a non-deductible IRA contribution in because anyone can, regardless of income limits, and then you immediately convert it to Roth because there are no income limitations on Roth conversions. That might be out the door. Another proposal, which I really, really don't like this one at all, to harmonize the required minimum distribution rules for Roth IRAs and traditional IRAs, basically saying that you have to take a minimum distribution from a Roth IRA too. Now, again, this is a wish list. This isn't going into law, but I want to put it out there for people to at least be aware of. This is the worst proposal in the entire budget. I mean, individuals made Roth contributions and conversions over the last 17 years, and many of them did so because they knew they did not have to take required distributions. So to change the rule now, just not fair. But at least the administration should grandfather any existing Roth IRAs so that the old rules apply to that old money. There's some other things like eliminating RMDs in tax-favored accounts that are under 100 grand, creating a maximum tax benefit that you can get for putting money into a 401k or an IRA. And this was another big one. And this is one that I actually wrote about in our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, that could possibly go away. The mandatory five-year distribution rule for non-spouse beneficiaries on IRAs. The overwhelming majority of non-spouse beneficiaries would be forced to empty their inherited retirement accounts by the end of the fifth year at the owner's death. To be very clear, this provision would effectively mark the death of the stretch IRA that we've talked so much about here on the show and all the benefits that go along with it. But, you know, here's my position on this. And if retirement accounts are really for retirement, then as much as you may not like this provision, and trust me, I don't like it at all, it's a reasonable position for the administration to take. Our government's broke. The stretch IRA is providing huge tax benefits to the beneficiaries of IRAs, and they need the money. So guess what? There's trillions and trillions of dollars in retirement accounts, and it's untaxed money or untapped money to the tax man. It's a good way for them to get it out quickly. All kinds of stuff in there. There's about, gosh, how many are there? There's 14 different ones, some mandatory auto enrolls for IRAs for certain small businesses. There's a bunch. You can look it up online and check it all out. We're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, we'll be joined by the fixed income manager over at our office, CFCI, our own Eric Giesler. We're going to be talking a lot about interest rates. We're going to be talking about what's going around and happening in the world and in the economy. And we're going to try to keep it positive because there's a lot of negative stuff out there. And I'm not a negative person. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. On the phone now with me live is our fixed income manager over at CFCI, the glass half full guy today. Eric Giesler joins me now on the phone. Biggie, as we talk about the economy, we talk about interest rates. You know, when the Fed started to raise interest rates in December, everyone felt like that rates could very well start to creep up, but they've not gone up. In fact, they've gone down, especially the 10-year. I think the 10-year closed at around 153 today, which was completely shocking to me. What's this telling us right now?
Well, I think it's two things. Number one, I think there's a flight to quality, if you will, that the risks that are in the market right now, people are looking for safe investments and treasury bonds and government sovereign debt seems to be one of the safest places to go. I think that's number one. And I think that second of all, that it's really telling us that maybe in the global perspective, that economic growth is really slowing down. And I don't think it's news to anybody, but I think it's now being realized. If you look back to 1990, I looked this up today. We're down about 450 basis points, or 4.5%. So we've been on kind of a steady decline since for over 20 years. So I think that this phenomenon, it certainly isn't in the United States. It crosses all borders. So I just think it's finally being realized in the market.
Yeah, the U.S. Treasury looks like a pretty good bargain. When you look at France's 10-year rate, folks, is at 0.657 as of a week ago. Maybe even lower now, I'm not sure. Germany's at, you won't believe this, 10-year bond in Germany, 0.341%. Unbelievable. Even Italy and Spain, those that we were talking about being on the ropes, Eric, about a year or two ago, they're all 1.5 or below. So the U.S. at 153 still looks like a pretty good deal. And what else is interesting, and people have always said, if the Chinese start selling all of our government bonds, we're in trouble. Well, guess what, folks? They've been selling lots of government bonds, and we're not in trouble. There's been plenty of buyers out there for that. They've been doing it, Eric, to prop up the yuan. And, boy, they're kind of on the ropes over there in China right now, it seems, at least they are.
Well, I think it was never realistic to expect 11% or 10% growth out of the Chinese to begin with. Then you call into question whether you were ever getting the true picture from their books anyway. So I don't think that's just one symptom of the problem. You know, we have demographic factors all over the world. Mm-hmm. We have changes in investment opportunities that have changed primarily since 2008. We certainly have lower growth expectations. You touched on that in the first segment, that we are a global economy, and the companies that operate in that global economy are affected by across all borders. So, you know, what goes on in France or Germany may or may not affect us to some extent.
And you're a believer in, yeah, we're in a correction here. There's no doubt about that. From the highs, we're down about 16, and actually now we're down about 18 or 19% on the S&P. It's okay. I mean, it's part of life. It's part of being an investor, but you can own good quality stuff. We think that fundamentals matter and weather through this stuff on the equity side. I know equities aren't really your thing, but when we're talking the entire market, I mean, you've been pretty much a fan of owning.
Well, I think that from an investment perspective, it isn't any one thing. It isn't just the Chinese economy. It's not just the oil crash. It's not just Fed raising rates. You know, if you go look back and you look at, if you want to kind of pick on the NASDAQ, if you look at the volatility of the NASDAQ, this is what we would expect it to be doing, because tech stocks have gone up and they've gone down, you know, as a percentage. The change isn't that big. Tech stocks have done that. And so are we long in the tooth in a bull market? We hear those kinds of things. I just don't think so. I think that we're just in this moment of evaluating risk because of what central banks have done. Mm-hmm. I think we're taking a pause here and just seeing what the impact is and reevaluating what the cost of risk is.
So as interest rates have come down, typically that's good for bond prices. So when you look at a statement, you would think, okay, yeah, the stocks are down, but my bonds should be up. And right now, Eric, we're not seeing that so much. And that's because of what's known in our world as the credit spreads. Can you kind of walk people through that just for a second?
Well, if we all believe that there is a risk-free rate, and generally that's described as treasury rates or government bond rates, if you buy a credit, a corporate credit, a municipal credit, it is always compared to what the risk-free rate is. And there is a risk premium added on to the risk-free rate. And that risk premium has grown immensely, anywhere from over 75 basis points in very high credits to, and when I say high credits, double A credits, single A credits, to well over 300 or 400 additional spread is needed in order to sell or to have any liquidity in the in the high yield market. So we've seen a repricing of credit risk both in the equity market and in the bond market, and those two things, that credit risk, are very highly correlated. So we've had the prices of bonds go down, and we've had the price of stocks go down.
Yeah, which is not what people think generally when they own stocks and bonds. They want one to zig when the other one zags. This week, we put out a market update, a bond market update, to our clients specifically who own fixed income, talking about just the mechanics of a bond, the face amount, the interest that they get paid on that face, maturity dates. There's nothing like an individual bond. When you look at a stock and it's down 20%, and folks will say, if I don't sell that, I've not lost. Well, you've not realized the loss, but you've actually lost it, folks. I hate to tell you that. But on a bond, Eric, an unrealized loss can truly be an unrealized loss as long as you hang on to it long enough and bearing any default on that bond, you're going to get your money back, right?
Correct. That's why you don't get a 10% return like you do in the stock market, because you're just going to get that coupon.
One last thing I wanted to get your thoughts on, oil. Oil's gotten down to, I think it was close to what, $25 today, a barrel? A lot of supply, low demand globally, I mean, according to what you read. We have a strengthening dollar, seems to be a three-headed monster against oil right now. You would certainly think that when you're putting gas in your tank at $1.35, I mean, in fact, Eric, I thought the pump was broken. It kicked off at $16.50, and I was almost down to nothing in gas. It kicked off. I'm like, something's wrong with the pump. I mean, that's a lot of extra cash in people's pockets, but it doesn't seem to be making it out into the system right now. Do you have a good explanation for that?
Well, I think people are generally adverse to taking risk, and so I think they're putting their money in the bank, or they're hanging on to it rather than spending it. And I think that's part of this this general economic slowdown that we have in the country. Not only are corporations not spending a lot of money, but I think the consumer has pulled back a little bit. And the oil price crash, if you will, you know, that's a supply and demand. It's really not anything special. We'd like to say that there are a whole bunch of influences, whether there's currency and the war in the Middle East, but there's just too much oil on the market right now. And I think it's going to take some time for us to work through that supply and have prices go higher. So I fill up your car a lot, Dave. That's what I'm telling you.
Drive a lot. Well, how dare people do the responsible thing, Eric? Save their money and pay down their debts and not actually go out and blow it on crazy stuff. Eric Giesler's been our guest. Eric, great job as always. I'm sure I'll talk with you tomorrow sometime. But thanks for doing a good job for our clients and bringing this information to everyone around, because right now is a very worrisome time for people. And I just wanted folks to hear that, hey, it's going to be okay. And especially when you have people. So thanks so much for that. So we'll talk to you tomorrow, Eric.
Well, thanks. Thank you so much, Dave, for having me on.
No problem. We'll talk to you later. Hey, let's take a break, guys. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about putting some things in perspective. As an example, what have stock returns actually have done in the past after a significant oil price decline? And what does the history tell us about the S&P 500 returns during a U.S. presidential election year? We're in one, by the way, if you haven't noticed. And this is coming from First Trust, of course. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hope you're enjoying the show. Saturday morning, 9 o'clock replay, and always on WGCLradio.com. You know, one of the big worries and fears that people have is with this oil being down so much, where do we go from here? And obviously, history does not guarantee that we'll have a repeat of this, but in the recent, really, what we're talking about is about a 75% decline in oil prices from what was around 114 down to now like 26 or 27. That's unbelievable. But it's made people wonder how things have actually performed historically in a similar aftermath of these steep declines. So I pulled out a really great chart from First Trust up in Chicago, and it went through some of these different cycles back in 85, 86, which is interesting how short these periods are when oil declined. It always happened within like 1 year. So October of 85 through March of 86. So not very far, not very long, like 6 months. It went down 66%. After that, 1 year after that bottomed out, the S&P 500 had a return of 26%. In 1990, it was September of 1990, and then February of 91, between those two pivot points, 52% decline in oil. S&P was up 16% a year after. December of 1996 through November of 98, that's, again, we're not talking about real long periods. This is about the longest one. Negative 57% drop in oil. Market was up 21% a year after. At June of 08 to January of 09, so a very short period of time, we remember this well, oil dropped 70% during that six-month period of time, only to see the market rebound 33% in the 1 year thereafter. So right now, we're sitting at about 75% decline in oil from the peak. It started, let's say, in June of 14, and here we are in 16 now. So if history holds, it should be bottoming soon based on both the time, the calendar, and then also just the percent of oil drop. So again, going back to what Eric and I were talking about before, this isn't a time for drastic changes. You don't want to change strategies in the middle of this. Rod and I talked about this all week long. You can't let these emotional times drive your investment decisions. You have to stick with the strategy. Don't flip and say, well, I don't want to be in dividend stocks anymore. I want to be in growth. I don't want to be in growth. I want to be in this or that. I can tell you from being in this business a long time, people that have done that consistently, they don't make any money. In fact, they usually lose money. But those that stick to a strategy and stick through these times, they usually come out on the other side pretty darn good. All right, let's talk about S&P 500 returns during an election year, also from First Trust. There's many factors that impact the stock market, of course, but one of the big common concerns is how a change in the American president affects the markets. The S&P has seen more positive returns than negatives during presidential years by far. And if you look at the time, it's pretty interesting that when a Republican was elected, then the average return was 15.6% in that year. A Democrat, 7.6. So in all election years, it was 11.25%. And we've had a couple of doozies in there. Of course, when Obama was elected in 08, it was during the financial crisis, and it was down 37% that year. But then when you look at one of the years Reagan, I think, was elected, it was also down about the same. So you kind of wash those out, and I don't think it matters a whole lot whether it's a Democrat that gets elected or a Republican that gets elected. But generally, election years are pretty darn good. There's been 22 elections since the S&P 500 index began. In those election years, 18 of 22, 82% of the time, provided a positive performance. Again, when a Democrat was in office, and this is pretty interesting, when a Democrat was in office and a new Democrat was elected, the total return for the next year was 11%. But when a Democrat was in the office and a Republican was elected, the total return for the following year, 13.2%. So I guess you want to root for a Republican being nominated and also into the White House, because that will bring us a better return on the S&P. So anyway, that's the perspective I wanted to give you. I hope you enjoyed that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've been joined now by our own Doug Hughes, who he and I will be teaching a class at Ivy Tech this coming week. It's based on our book, our new book that came out last year, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, a resource for those ages 50 and older. That is the textbook, and it lasts for 2 days. It's 2.5 hours each class. It costs $39 to come. It's at Ivy Tech. You go to ivytech.edu to sign up. I think we already have several people sign up for the class, looking very, very forward to this. It's the very first time we've been able to put together a class like this, and hopefully it'll be the class that everyone hopes it will be on retirement readiness. So that's it. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. Doug Hughes will join us live. This is Your Money with David Hayes. So tonight, it's Thursday night. If you listen on Saturday morning, you already know the results. But Thursday night, we're going to be IU's going to be playing the Hawkeyes of Iowa at 9 o'clock tonight. So here's how big of a wuss I am. I have season tickets, and I enjoy going to the game. But I enjoy going at 2 in the afternoon or 7 o'clock at night during the week. When it's a 9 o'clock start, old Dave is tired. He gets tired. So about halftime, I'm already ready to go home. So I gave the gift of tickets to my nephew, and he's enjoying the game. They're on the 17th row right across an IU bench. So I hope he enjoys that a great deal. And I'm going to, after the show, grab something to eat, head home, and turn on the TV and probably watch a game before the Hoosiers come on. And then hopefully I can stay awake for the entire game. Hopefully it's good enough for me to stay awake for the entire game. I remember leaving a game recently. I don't remember which one it was. And we were up about 6 points and there was about a minute and a half left. And, you know, I wanted to beat the traffic. So it was my son and I, and we jumped out of there. And he said, "You want to go?" And I said, "Yeah, I want to go." I said, "Because if we lose this lead, I don't want to be here to watch it." So I wanted to leave anyway. But yeah, good luck to the Hoosiers tonight. If we're shooting well, we should do well. Doug Hughes is joining me live in the studio as well. And we wrote a book last year, and it was called Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. It's still called Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. It's a resource for adults ages 50 and older. And we have taught a class through Indiana University Continuing Studies and then at Ivy Tech Lifelong Learning Center on retirement readiness for 8 years. So we've been doing this a long time. Usually it's two classes in the spring and two classes in the fall. So we have another class starting next week. It's February 17th from 6 to 8:30 in the evening. It's a Wednesday night. And then again the following Wednesday night, we would wrap up the class. It costs $39 to attend. That's it for basically 5 hours of instruction. You do get a copy of our book, and that is the course manual, for lack of a better word. It's over at Lampkin Hall at Ivy Tech. And again, you can go to ivytech.edu and check that out. I'm kind of looking at the invitation here, and I'm sure it's on here somewhere, but oh, I see it down at the bottom. ivytech.edu, and then you go to the Center for Lifelong Learning and just type in Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. It should pop right up. And even though it says registration closed, I think they basically do that to kind of get a head count. It's not closed. You can still register all the way up until the day of, since it's an evening class. So, Doug, you're now joining me here, yes. And we're going to be covering lots of things in the class. I'm going to kick off the teaching the first night, and we're going to be talking planning for healthcare in retirement, calculating your retirement income needs, all kinds of stuff that we're going to be covering during the class, calculating how much money you're going to need to retire. That piece right there is pretty interesting because people make this very, very complicated, and to me it's not.
Right.
If you're a paycheck person and you're 5 years away from retirement, maybe your house is getting close to being paid off, maybe it's already paid off, your kids are out of the house, they're off the payroll, and you just want to replace what it is that you're making in your paycheck. Or maybe it's a percentage of that. Maybe you've done a good job saving in the bank. But we have to determine what it is that you want to replace in income. And then we just deduct what income sources you might have. Maybe you work for the county or the schools and have a pension. Maybe you work for GE and have a pension. But then you might have some Social Security. Hopefully you do. And then you deduct those off of what it is that you need. You add in your taxes, of course. And then you say, okay, well, how much am I going to have to take from my investments? You back that number in, and then it tells you how much you're going to need, how much are you saving, what kind of risk are you willing to take to get there. And Doug, at the end of the day, if you don't have enough money, there's only a couple of moving parts. You either save more, you work a little bit longer, or you take on a little more risk to try to get a little better return. It's pretty simple.
Absolutely. And David, you know, you went through that list of things that people can do to kind of remedy the situation. And what our observation has been down through the years has simply been that as uncomfortable as this is, the path that has the more predictable outcome is saving more. Because typically when people choose the option, I'll be more aggressive with my investments, and then we run through a 6 weeks like we've just had.
Right.
The next thing you know, we have, I don't want to take on that much risk. So really making savings part of the payment plan, that's a phrase that you coined many years ago on this program, but making savings part of your payment plan and increasing the amount of savings that you're doing is going to be the bedrock or the cornerstone or the foundation of the absolute success of your retirement planning. So it's not just the return you need to be after. You know, when we look at all these calculators, they have the rate of return, pre-tax, after-tax, inflation, and all that. Really, it comes down to the amount of money that you're saving.
In this class, we're going to get the whiteboard out, and we're going to be talking people through some of these ideas. We're going to talk about developing strategies to increase your Social Security. There's been some changes with Social Security, but the window is still open for a certain demographic. We're going to talk about reducing the financial risk right before you retire. I mean, a lot of folks right now, I mean, I met with someone today, Doug, who is going to retire at the end of the year. They just came in today. So we're talking, what, 9, 8, 10 months away, 11 months. And their retirement account was 70% stocks and 30% bonds. And they were freaked out because they had thought they had enough money to retire, and now they don't. Well, they were taking too much risk. And it would have been nice to have gotten to that person a few years ago so that we could have determined their necessary return needed. And my guess is it wouldn't have been near as risky as what they were in.
And you know, David, when a lot of our listeners are looking at their investment options on their 401ks and things like that, they have what are called the life cycle funds, which, you know, retirement ready or whatever, 2020, 2025, 2030. That really is a path that people are beginning to appreciate and take a closer bit of attention to, because it automatically rebalances down to a lower risk profile without the investor having to do anything. Now, the challenge with that too, though, is that if you don't align that number with your right retirement date, then you might be getting much more conservative than you need to be at an earlier stage.
Right,
so
right.
In any event, that is what you're talking about, is when you're 2 or 3 years out, you need to take a step back and say, what if the market goes down one of the next 3 years? What impact will that have? And you know the old saying, what would change your retirement more, if $1 million became $2 million or $1 million became $500,000?
Right,
there
exactly.
You go.
And those lifestyle funds for many plans have become the default. So
they're default.
They will default into that, and then just if you don't do anything at all, you're probably going to be okay. We're going to talk about properly positioning your estate and lowering taxes, and then, of course, avoiding the big 10 financial hurdles. And Ed Slott put a terrific quote on the back of our book, which said the section on the big 10 major financial roadblocks by itself was worth the price of admission. Of course, Ed Slott from IRAhelp.com and a good friend of mine. So, Doug, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're just encouraging people to sign up for the class. $39. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
wonderful deal.
Yeah, and the book's worth $16, according to Amazon. I'm not sure if it really is, but that's what Amazon says.
You know, one of the things that we talk about, David, and I mentioned this on the program before, when you look at the course outline, We've always talked about this, that when the markets are crazy, mm-hmm. then people want to talk investments. When the markets are fine, people want to talk about another subject we didn't talk too much about there, and that's life planning. And there is an awful lot to life planning, and it's not just, you know, how you spend every day, but it's how you spend weeks and months and years. And also, if something sets in, as we talked about at the lunch table today, a discontinuous change with your health, mm-hmm. What does that planning look like? Where are people going to be at? What's going to be going on? Who are all the players involved in that? And so the life planning section actually is, it's not just do you want to have a yacht or do you want to have a vineyard in California when you retire? It really is more about what are you spending the most time on and are you getting satisfied with the effort that you're putting into it?
And wouldn't you agree, 8 years ago when we started teaching this class, we kind of brushed over that topic.
We did.
But now, as maybe it's just because we're older now and more appreciative, or we've seen people retire more mm-hmm. in droves, being connected both, you know, emotionally, with your spouse, spiritually, whatever it might be, just being prepared for that retirement. And our book has an entire chapter dedicated to that, just kind of getting on the right, on the same page. So, hey, let's take a break. When we come back, we have the questions of the week. I have, gosh, maybe 8 or 9 of these things. Doug's not seen a single one of them. So
wonderful.
Can't wait to catch him off guard, at least maybe once or twice. We'll be back, guys. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is with me live in the studio. If you missed any of the show, you can always catch it on Saturday mornings at 9 and always on WGCLRadio.com. Doug Hughes is in with me. We're going to be going through some of the questions of the week. Got one here, Dougie, from someone who had, and I took this one myself, and I'll give it to you. He has money in a company retirement plan and money in IRAs as well. He's over 70 and a half, so he has to take minimum distributions. He's taking money from his company plan, which he believes satisfied the RMDs for everything. But he received 1098s in the mail that said, you have a minimum distribution on these different IRAs. His question is, does he really still have to take a minimum distribution from those IRAs too, even though he's already taken it from his company plan?
Well, David, yes, he does. It's the aggregation rules that are out there that cause us to have everything that is in a qualified account pushed through and have to take the RMDs out of that.
I wish they would put that in the president's budget proposals for retirement accounts. They're talking about simplifying RMDs. Mm-hmm. What they're talking about is trying to make RMDs on Roth IRAs as well. So hopefully that gets killed. I've got one here. I had a person sell their house. They received a 1099-S for the entire proceeds of the home. She said, I bought another house. It was less expensive, but I'm not sure that matters. Will I owe tax on the gain of my old home? I have really no idea how this works. So I went to a place called Nanu.com, I think it was called, to get the exact rules and how it works. Because I knew them, but I wanted to make sure that I explained it well. This is how it works. You can exclude up to $250,000 of capital gains tax on the sale of your personal residence. If you're married, that's $500,000. You both get $250,000. To claim the whole exclusion, you have to have owned and lived in your home for an aggregate of at least 2 of 5 years. So if you were in the house for 6 months, went to Florida for 6 months, 6 months Florida, so basically over 4 years, you will have lived there for at least two, then you qualify as your personal residence. Now your gain isn't necessarily your selling price, you know, minus what you paid for it. What you do is you look at what did you really pay for the home, what did you put into the home in form of like capital improvements, and then what kind of expenses were incurred when you bought the home, and the same thing when you sell it. And then at the end of the day, if it's less than $250 or $500, then you're fine. So for most people, you never pay taxes on the personal residence of your home. That changed all the way back, believe it or not, in 1997. So people still believe that. And you can actually sell a home and have a gain every 2 years. So that's the answer to that one. Doug, I have one here for you. A check was cut from my IRA in December, but I never received it. They canceled it, and they're sending out a new one. Will I be taxed on the money on 2015's tax return, or will it be 2016 since I actually never got the money?
Well, you know, they might be thinking if they had too much income in 15 and then not enough in 16, they wanted to be in 16. But, David, unfortunately, it's going to be for the year that they actually requested the check to be distributed.
2015. So, yeah. Let's see. I've got another one here for you, Doug. Real easy one.
Okay.
Because we've only gotten this maybe, I'm going to guess, 175 times today. Do I have all my tax documents, Doug?
Well, the answer is probably not.
Haven't received those questions, but I've heard our staff on the phone.
All day long. They haven't come out yet.
They sound like an Indian call center over there answering these questions. It's crazy. So,
yes.
All right, we've got another one. Doug just actually got this today via email through the radio station's website. He said, will you talk about the relationship of the three markets, the S&P, the Dow, and the NASDAQ, the percentage ups and downs, the dollar increases, decreases, because in 2013, the big three increased approximately 22%, but my portfolio did 12%, a 10% difference. In 2014, it was a 12% difference. I'm sorry, they did 12 aggregately, and he did 5. And then again in 2015, it was a 2% return. I don't actually see where he ended up. But basically what he's asking is, in that should I be upset, or that's really the question. The markets were up as a combination 22% according to his email in 2013, and he was up 12%, and it just kept looking that way. And Doug, there actually is a very logical answer to this, and I'm going to have you do it.
Sure. Well, let's go back to the very first part of that question, is can we compare what these big three are, which was the Dow, the S&P, mm-hmm. and the NASDAQ. So the Dow Jones Industrial Average is 30 industrial stocks. The S&P 500 are 500 of the largest stocks on the index. And the NASDAQ is it was about 2,000 stocks, I think, on the NASDAQ. And they're all growth, tech, those kind of things are on there.
Tech
maybe
heavy,
smaller.
Yep.
Yeah, tech heavy. So these are very different indexes, meaning that they have very different results. So when you combine those and you see a positive 22% and the client is saying, well, I only had a 12% return, probably the easiest answer is there that there has been some kind of asset allocation. Maybe there's bonds in there. Maybe there's something in there. But at the same time, they all kind of run together, and one of them may be much higher than the others, which brings the average down.
Well, if you look at emerging markets, so here's the thing. Most of these portfolios, these are model portfolios. They're asset allocated to large cap. Mid cap, which isn't even mentioned in the big three, small cap could be in the NASDAQ possibly, emerging markets, international, high yield bonds, real estate. I mean, all of those combined. If you look at the big three that might have been up 22%, mm-hmm. you could turn around, Doug, in 2013. I'm not sure what the worst performer was, but I bet it was
commodities.
He may have had some commodities. What was the next worst one?
Emerging market equities that you referenced.
And what was it down?
It was down 2.3. Commodities down 9.5.
Yeah, so that you drag get some drag there with some of the mm-hmm. diversification, and that's what's happened. So the price of your diversification is that your returns were lower. So I wouldn't necessarily fire my investment guy over this, because this is more common than what you think. But I will tell you, of late, and I say of late in the last year or so, we have really focused on trying to keep things more simple and even maybe a little more concentrated. And here's why. Back when I started in 1994, all of these things weren't nearly as correlated as they are today. International wasn't nearly as correlated to the U.S. markets. But what seems to happen when things go down, everything seems to be correlated. But when things go back up, they're not. So you may have a big run in the S&P at 33%, but yet, the emerging markets was up 2 or down 2. And then the next year, the S&P, which is the big U.S. stuff, goes down 20%. Well, guess what? The emerging markets sell off in 20% as well. So it seems like all that stuff is correlated on the downside and not so much on the upside. So we've been kind of rethinking this asset allocation for quite some time and kind of paring this down to keep it simple, stupid, as we've been saying. So,
mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, about asset allocation strategies is that the goal there is that it should be rebalanced, too. And so sometimes if asset allocation isn't rebalanced, David, then we have something that gets a little bit heavy to the weighting side. And then if that particular sector does badly, then the asset allocation doesn't do what it's supposed to do.
And I have a Callan chart here in front of me, which is basically all of the asset classes. And if you have them evenly weighted in 2015, you would have lost 2%. 2014, you would have been up 5.2. 2013, you would have been up, looks like about, 15%?
15, yeah.
So when you kind of compare it to Dennis's portfolio that he sent me, it seems about right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, we have got to take a break. Otherwise, I'm going to be running into whatever show is next. So we'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right. You know, if you have a question, and I really, really enjoy getting them from listeners, we get a lot of them from existing clients. We get a lot of them in the workshops that we do, like we're doing through Ivy Tech. But I love when someone takes the time and reaches out via email. And you can do that through our website, cfci.us. You can do it through the radio station's website, which is wgclradio.com. In fact, I think it was Glass that sent me the email today from one of the listeners. So again, we appreciate that very, very much. Next week's show, still working on Rodney Johnson to get him nailed down. It's just hard because he's a very busy guy, and they've been traveling all over the world talking about economics, demographics, spending patterns, and stuff that just kind of makes sense to people. And that's what I love bringing a Rodney on, because when he's done, people can kind of relate to it and kind of get a aha moment and make sense of everything that's happening. Not everything, but a lot of things that's happening. And Doug, I know we've got a long year ahead of us, so this first month, we don't want it to get us down. I've told the listeners at the very start, this is going to be a glass half full show. There's enough negativity out there. We're not going to pile on.
Well, we always like to remind everyone then they can call our office to get a copy of this, intra-year lows versus the end of the year return. And on many years, down 7, 8, 10, 12, 14, 15, 20%. Only to finish up. So we always say to people, we don't know exactly where the bottom is, but we also know exactly where the top is.
Yeah,
and so this year could be that way.
We can email you that copy. I mean, this is stuff that just pretty much is designed to sort of calm your nerves and put some of your fears to rest. So, and I'm really excited about next week's class we're teaching to get at Ivy Tech, and you can still sign up. Go to ivytech.edu. It goes from 6 in the evening to 8:30 at night. Two nights in a row. Two Wednesdays in a row. Again, $39. Comes with a book, the whole bit. Because I'm sure as we talk about these different world events and economic events, some terrific questions will come out of the class, and you'll hear them on next week's show. So besides money and dealing with clients and family stuff you've got going on, I know you're coaching your son's basketball team.
Who knew that I would be a coach? You know, at the office, they call me the big fundamental after Tim Duncan for my prowess and my practices of financial planning. But we'll see. I don't know that I'm actually going to get the title of that for my coaching of the basketball team.
Well, Wayne Thacker's been helping you coach, and
in all honesty, he is outstanding at that, and I give him props for that publicly, out loud. He really is an outstanding basketball coach. My son said, "Dad, everyone loved what we did. It felt like an NBA practice."
Well, you know, Wayne.
Yeah.
But like I told you guys, he was a terrible Little League football coach. Hey, guys, we appreciate you hanging out with us. I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, if you want to catch the entire show, if you missed it, Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock, and then always on WGCLradio.com. Hope everyone has a great rest of the week. We'll talk to you again next Thursday night at 6 here on the station. Goodbye. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.